Our rose friend Susan Lyall Young's love for roses has led her down many meandering paths. For nearly a decade, she's traveled America in search of rare and out-of-commerce roses to propagate and share, cultivating many enduring friendships along the way. In 2015, she began offering organically grown heirloom roses and unusual cut botanicals to Nashville floral designers. And in 2018, she was named curator of the nursery at Grace Rose Farm, an online rose nursery offering budded and potted heirloom and rare roses. Susan first joined us on Rose Chat with her story of buying one bagged rose that launched her into rose fever. Oh, we all know about rose fever. Let's check in with Susan and see what she's up to now, because it's time for Rose Chat.
It's time for the Rose Chat podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey, Susan, I'm ready to chat about roses. What about you?
Always.
The weather outside makes it even more important.
No kidding.
Now, you've been busy since we last chatted, and for those who aren't or just now learning about your work, for about 10 years, you've been traveling around the U.S. in search of rare and out-of-commerce roses. How's it going?
Well, it's been an incredible journey. So much fun, so many neat people, so many wonderful places seen. So many gorgeous roses I just never even knew existed. It's really been a total blessing all around.
So tell us about some of the places you've been.
Well, I guess in the early days, I did a lot in New Orleans and Florida, but my spiritual home kind of became California, you know. I was doing a little research for this interview, and I came across an old agricultural manual from the 1900s, and it said, "We think there is no better country on the planet Earth in which to grow roses than the state of California." So California is, for the United States anyway, just rose mecca, primarily because they don't get enough cold in most areas for roses to experience dieback. So the ones that have been planted and forgotten that are strong and hardy, they're still there in some cases, although rapidly disappearing with, quote unquote progress.
So, are you finding people where you're finding the roses? Do you get to hear stories, or are they in the hills and dales of California? Or,
well, a little bit of both. You know, I took a trip, I guess, last May and met with some great California rose people. Kim Rupert, who is just an encyclopedia of roses, mm-hmm. and Fred Boutan, who has studied found roses all of his life. We went up to the Gold Rush country, mm-hmm. where a lot of roses are still there. Evidently, when people came west during the Gold Rush, they literally brought little slips of roses with them across the country and planted them at their homesteads, just as reminders of homes. A lot of of home back east, a lot of times they planted them on graves as reminders. And these roses are so tough that, you know, they're there through the years of drought and everything else. I mean, I saw them growing up through the floorboards of, you know, rotting little minor cottages, mm-hmm. just as happy as they could be.
Did you find any names? Are you finding roses without names? Are you able to match the roses to names that we've heard of?
Well, that is a pursuit in and of itself. There's actually a manual that was created by one of the rose societies out in California on how to identify a rose. When you come across a rose, there are many things that you need to observe and document. And once that's done, it's given a study name and guesses are made about what it could be. Then it's grown side by side compared to other roses that are identified as that particular rose. And it's never stated that it is the same rose. Mm-hmm. It's stated that it is likely the same rose. One that particularly comes to mind is a rose called Mistress Bosinque, which is a rose that has been found all over California with many different study names. It's known as Cottonwood Cemetery Blush Rose, Legacy of Samuel Briggs, which means it was found on his grave. Petaluma Blush, particularly, is how I've seen it grown. But it is presumed to be the rose Mistress Bosinque, which is a French rose from 1832. So, you know, things like that, I guess, excite me. It's kind of a little detective work that makes life a little bit more interesting when you see a rose and you're particularly interested in its history, and then to see it being grown with literally no care. You know, we like to think that we're responsible for our roses, their growth and beauty, but, you know, some of them are going to excel regardless.
You know, that's true. And just hearing your story and some of stories of others who are preservationists has made me just so excited to start looking around my world here at cemeteries and historical places to see what I can find.
It's great fun, Teresa.
Oh, I mean, I'm excited to do more of it. Now, one of the things that comes up is, you know, you're in California, you garden in Tennessee. So you're getting these roses and you're bringing them back, you know, and people are always so interested in propagation. You know, how do we do it? How do we do it well? In fact, there's so many opportunities where people need to know this. Last week, I heard from a woman, I believe she was in Canada, and her parents are deceased. They grew beautiful roses. She doesn't know much about roses. You know, in a short while, she will no longer have access to the property, so she wants cuttings, and she doesn't know what to do with them. So there's so many people out there who are interested in this, so we want to know your tips.
I will tell you how I do it, which is specific to my climate, and then I will tell you how other people have success in a different climate. So here in Tennessee, we have got so much humidity and heat, a proper heat to try to propagate roses, probably April through, I would say, October. And I use a misting system like you would get at any, you know, big box store to mist plants. Mm-hmm. You can set it up on a timer. You can set it to come on. I usually set mine to come on maybe four times a day for 15 seconds each. When I was in California, I would collect the cuttings. You need about 10 to 12 inches of a stem. You need to make sure it's a healthy stem. You need to make sure that it's not going to compromise the plant if you take cuttings from it, you know, that it's vigorous and happy and healthy. And always, if the roses are on someone's property, you should try to ask permission before you take the cutting. But what I like to do is take the cuttings. I carry a mister bottle with me, which I mist newspaper. I roll up my cuttings in newspaper. I put a tag in there stating where it is, where I found it. And for me, being in California, I load up a box and 2-day air it home to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So once I get a home, you take the bottom, maybe quarter inch, and you just lightly scar it. You don't want to cut into it. You don't want to slice into it. You just want to barely take the top layer, the cambium, the skin of the stem with a razor blade, very, very thin slice. And I use rooting hormone. And then I put what I found the best for me with our humidity is to put them in builder sand. It's very well draining because primarily the concern is going to be rot. That's usually what happens with my cuttings. They'll rot if they're not going to take. And some roses will take like a charm, and some roses I've never, ever been able to get to root successfully. That was part of the inspiration behind the nursery and budding was, we can't get these to go on root, so let's bud them. So the other thing I would suggest is to not get disheartened, to not give up. Mm-hmm. It's not easy in that it takes, it's a learned skill. Mm-hmm. You don't just wake up and successfully, although some roses will just root like a charm, but for the most part, it's a learned skill and it takes some time. But if you take notes and you pay attention to what you're doing, you get better and better at it. And most roses, after a couple of weeks, you can give just the tiniest of tugs. And if you get some resistance, you've got roots. So once you have roots, then you want to slowly over time move them away. You know, I would put mine kind of not in the direct spray of the mist so that it might stay moist but not get too soggy. It's not going to need as much water. And eventually you'll start to see new leaves. And when you get new leaves, you want to get just some fish emulsion or kelp and probably dilute that maybe 4 or 5 times, super, super weak, and just give them what I call a snack. You know, just that super diluted organic matter in your watering can, they'll grow for you.
So you have such good luck, Susan. How many roses are you growing right now?
Honestly, Teresa, I've lost track. I know it's 1,000 or so between home and the farm and what's in pots. It's so rewarding because for the most part, you know, the roses that I do collect, they're not out there. So to be able to reproduce one and grow and share with other people and know that, you know, even if that property is bulldozed or the cemetery sprays it with the herbicide, you know, there's still one of those roses out there floating around. That's the best way to save them is to get them spread around, you know?
So I can tell you have a passion. You love these
roses. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should take just a moment and celebrate that one bagged rose. Was it Kmart where you bought a bagged rose? Yeah. We tell people to never do that. Stay away from the bagged roses. And you took that one rose. It must have been so good to you that it just launched all these feelings and you into a, you know, this career of writing.
It really did. It was Mr. Lincoln. Ah! So, you know what a beauty that is.
And fragrant, all the good stuff.
That for me is everything. Is the fragrance. You know, the fragrance is what keeps me so in love with all of these roses because they all have such different fragrances. Even
now, you have the roses, but you have other things on your farm, and you're working with the local florist. Tell us a little bit about that work.
Well, I have so many roses and, you know, garden roses are really popular right now in floral design and weddings. So-called garden roses aren't really garden roses in that they're grown indoors under glass, which literally affects their fragrance. They don't have much scent when they're grown indoors. They don't get that beautiful form that they get when they're grown outdoors. When they're true outdoor grown garden roses, they just look differently than anything else. And, you know, Nashville has grown and has become a really popular wedding destination. So I thought, maybe I should offer these garden roses to florists since I have so many. They've all been really excited and supportive about my efforts, but the couple of issues I've run into, one, wedding roses are mostly white and blush, and those aren't my favorite kind to grow. So I don't have a lot of what they want, number one. And number two, to be able to provide, let's say, 200 blush roses for an event, the nature of my climate and my growing conditions, I would need to have probably 50 to 100 plants of that one variety to be able to cut that much at any one time. So for me, my cut garden roses with florists have become a much smaller scale. I only work with a few florists who do smaller events and who have brides who are open maybe to more colors, more shades, and kind of a little, it's just a niche, I guess. The larger florists here in town are still ordering theirs and having them, you know, flown in. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can see where, you know, when you have something very, very specific that it's hard to provide. But boy, for those special events that you can provide your own roses for, that's a very special thing. And I'm sure that those who have them, you know, that is a special thing for them to know where they come from.
Oh, now, yeah, the brides love them in their bouquets.
This is just special. The whole thing is special. You know, we have weddings are a little bit different now, and they are very specific to the bride. So I'm sure that you're making someone's dreams come true with those pretty roses. Now, I know firsthand that you have some yummy soaps that you're working with now, and you have some other things too. I mean, they're just wonderful. So I want our listeners to hear about some of the products that you're doing.
Sure. Well, I was thinking about the interview today and how this all got started. I don't know. It was never like a grand plan. It was just kind of meandering way. But I remember my grandmother, you know, of course, who lived through the Depression. She never threw anything away. I mean, we reused tinfoil. You know, we never gave anything, never put anything in the trash can. You know, we made do with what we had. And that's kind of, I guess, how my rose soap came about. I'm so sorry. There were so many roses that weren't perfect enough for a bouquet or to sell. And I thought, well, what can I do with all these petals? And I'd been making soap and I thought, oh, I'll infuse the rose petals in the oil that I use for my soap. I don't know of anybody else doing that. So that's been another journey, Teresa, that's rose related. I've learned how to make soaps and I scent them with essential oils. I don't use any synthetic ingredients. They're just different. And they're so strongly scented that, you know, my entire house and workroom just always smell wonderful. Scent is such a motivator for me. It has changed, you know, my environment. You can sit down and have a little sniff of a rose and you automatically relax.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. You know, gardening in general does that for me. You know, it's like you don't have a care in the world in the garden, regardless of what's going on around you. And those scents, you know, they tap into our memory banks and give us good feelings. And they just, there's just so many things that we get from that.
Well, that was kind of the inspiration. So I've experimented with my soaps. I've created a really rosy lip balm that is like having a rose under your nose, I say. you know, when you just kind of need a break or feel a little stressed out, just a little whiff of that rose. There's something about rose that it seems to elevate your mood, but at the same time, it relaxes you. And it's been used for centuries as all kinds of tonics and medicines and treatments and remedies. And I'd like to give people the opportunity to experience that.
Well, the soaps that I have are very, it's a very luxurious soap, and it's the fragrance, you know, it, you know, you can walk down the hall from where it is and it's just, you smell it. It's just that, and it's not anything that's heavy. It's just, it's yummy. We think it's yummy around here. So,
well, thank you. Thank you. I think it's yummy too.
Now, are these products listed on your website or?
So all of that is in motion. My soap definitely is ready to go. And, you know, anyone who's interested in my soap can certainly email me through my website or reach out to me on Instagram. But I do have a photo shoot scheduled next month with a photographer for everything. So stay tuned. I have a newsletter sign up. People can sign up to be notified when everything is good to go and ready to launch. Sometimes I sell, you know, at events around town, but I'm always happy to get soap into the hands of folks who would like it.
Now, Susan, I got to see your garden, even though I wasn't in Nashville, but you're on YouTube, the Nashville Volunteer. It's wonderful. We get to see it. What was that experience like?
Oh my gosh. They gave me like 2 days notice. They said, hey, we've got a spot in the schedule. Can we come shoot? And I said, oh, okay.
Sure.
And so of course, you know, it was crazy weeding and mulching. And, you know, it was like Queen Elizabeth was coming to visit. So we really put on our best for them. And I just decided I was just going to talk, you know, like they say, if you have to get up in front of a bunch of people and give a speech, just think like you're speaking to one person. And so that's what I did. And the host was so gracious and knew a lot about, you know, plants and planting. And it turned out to be quite a kick. I look back on it, I think I made some mistakes. I think I may have given the wrong names for some roses. I'm not sure. I try not to look at it very often, but it was really fun. You know how it is. That time of year, the rose garden is never more beautiful than that time of year. I've got a huge found rose up in an old dogwood from Arcata, California, and it was in bloom. You know, that was the rose we were standing under. My ramblers were blooming. It was a good time.
Was a good time. And friends, you can see this on YouTube. If you haven't seen this video, do go to YouTube and look up the Nashville Volunteer Gardener Show. And a few episodes back, you'll see Susan and her amazing roses. Now, Susan, before we let you go, we have to know, of all of those roses, is there a favorite or a sort of a favorite or one that just comes to mind when you think of the garden?
Well, Teresa, you know how hard that is. I would have to say, you know, and I've thought about this question too. There are a couple of roses that to me give so much and ask so little that I think they're wonderful roses for beginners or for people who maybe don't have a whole lot of time to devote to their roses, but they're going to just give and give and give. One is the rose I was talking about earlier, the Mrs. Bosanquet, the Petaluma blush. She's a beautiful old rose. No one seems to know if she's bourbon or tea, but she's hardy to zone 5, and she's healthy and happy, beautiful kind of fleshy, rosy pink tea-like full blooms. Mm-hmm. And then another, which is a single, And I know lots of folks, when they are first exposed to roses, want the big bosom trollops, as I call them, you know, the big cabbage roses. But the singles really balance out the fuller roses, and they're so cheerful. And one that I would really recommend is named Mrs. Oakley Fisher. You know, those singles have those prominent stamens, which are so pretty and which remain after the petals fall and usually make really nice hips. She's kind of an apricot, pinkish, buff single, a real beauty.
And that's a color that's really prevalent right now and popular right now. People are wanting that color. So, well, here in the dead of winter, it just sounds so amazing. So, Susan, it's wonderful to chat about your roses. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Teresa.
Years in the making, Susan's collection of rare and antique budded roses offer varieties seldom seen in commerce these days. These roses are filled with fragrance, beauty, and simple elegance, and they're available for purchase at gracerosefarm.com. Take a few minutes and enjoy the beauty on her website. And just for you, our Rose Chat friends, Susan is offering a discount. Enter the code ROSECHAT to enjoy 15% off any purchase of two or more roses. Again, that website is gracerosefarm.com.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.